Welcome, dear souls, to the Way of the Yogi discussion group. It's Sunday, December 5th, 2011. I'm Zanna Harris.
I'm Deborah Barclay.
And I'm Katie Mulligan.
And together we're producing this podcast as an act of devotion to the practice and philosophies of yoga and as an act of service to the yoga community. Do you have any announcements? No announcements.
No announcements this week.
All right. So it's been a very eventful summer. It's been just wonderful. As we all know, James Bogue was in town for about 6 weeks, five of which I was able to participate with almost all of his teachings as he was here. And it's really clarified and deepened my understanding of a lot of these concepts. And it's also brought my practice to a level that I was not experiencing before. So I'm just really excited to be able to hopefully share some of what I've gained with you. And also can only hope to be able to communicate those things in a way that that you guys will be able to pick up on and just appreciate as much as I have appreciated his teachings. So let's just go ahead for a moment and sit back. Take a few deep breaths. Let all of the excitement of the outside world fade into the background. Bring our minds fully into this present moment, into the spirit of sharing, learning, and seeking. Guided by our hearts, and by that consciousness which unites us all. Okay. So, we left off in our own discussion with detachment. We had an intervening podcast with James, and it was amazing. I don't know if you guys have listened back through the talk that he gave to us for our Way of the Yogi meeting, but it was just so wonderful how he was able to really clarify and distill these teachings in a way that made so much sense in modern terms. And I love his storytelling. So he was really, really good at weaving in personal experience.
He really was. Yeah. I remember that about him with the park, the trip to the park, and the lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The idea of the Seward Park Lake, that was really interesting.
Being able to see to the depths and all that.
Yeah. Stuck in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've listened to, there's several recordings now from his talks, and I've listened to many, many, many of them. And every time I listen, I hear something new. So, yeah, it's just a wealth of information. And he actually was able to really settle a conflict that I had about just this last little piece that we've been working on. We're talking about practice and how Patanjali says that it's imperative to practice with devotion, with dedication, wholeheartedly. And for a long time, dirghakalya nirantaya, I think it is, dirghakala nirantaya, I can't find it now,
14.
There it is, yeah, dirghakala nirantaya, wow, there we go, okay, so, for a long time, without interruption, and then in 15, he turns around and says, but you have to be detached. And so I love the sirens.
It's like, I almost don't even hear them anymore.
So used to it.
It's ridiculous.
There's that detachment right there. Exactly, exactly.
It's like, so
when we practice being focused, when we practice staying in our center, things come along like the sirens, and they just go right by without our notice. And that is actually what this is talking about. So beautiful illustration. Yeah. Thank you.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing, actually. So when we come from our center, when we practice with devotion and dedication, then those things which would normally throw us from our center begin to just fade away, begin to not become such traumatic upheavals in our lives. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I was telling you guys just a little while ago that I had quite a disappointing letter come in the mail to me this morning. And it's something that I've been really looking forward to doing for a while. And now to be told that I might not be able to do it after all, I actually cried at first, and I called and I talked to my aunt about it because I'm very close with her, and she's always able to give me some good perspective on things. Yeah. So I reached out and then I really kind of sat down, or I actually took a walk and looked at the situation from an objective perspective, which is what my practice has been teaching me to do. Yep. You know, it's the same thing when I meditate. I sit down and I try to look at myself from an objective perspective. I try to find, I try to be what is actually looking and not the things I'm looking at, if that makes sense.
Totally.
And so what I know from my past is that everything works out the way it's supposed to, always.
Yeah.
So for some reason, this challenge is being placed before me. And it could be that this isn't my path. It could be that maybe I'm just supposed to exercise my skills a little more effectively and a little more, you know, like I need to work for it a little more.
Right.
You know? And apply myself and make it worthwhile, because anything worth having is worth working for, right?
Right.
And either way, I'll find out in the end. But right now, all I can do is just do what I can do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And in this very moment, I can't do anything. It's a holiday tomorrow.
Right.
It's Sunday today, you know.
Yeah.
So in this moment, all I can do is prepare for my next step.
Right.
You know, and so I can gather all of the information that I need, I can write out whatever, you know, petitioning I need to petition, that type of thing. But I can't worry about it.
Right.
Because that's not going to help anything, right? And all that will do is upset everything else I'm doing.
Right. And you can't control, you know, you can't control
control
the substance
of
the letter. You can't control the outcome, but you can control how you
react to it
and what you do with it. And just like you said, either, you know, you'll just apply yourself that much harder to try to achieve your goal, which will perhaps the purpose of that is to inculcate the sense of value of what it is that you're seeking in you before you embark on it.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Or there's a different path that's waiting
for
you.
That's right. So all I can do is more will be revealed. Just wait and see, you know?
And it's so hard to do.
It is so hard to do.
Yeah. We want to control, or
this
at least I do.
This is the detachment that Patanjali's talking about.
Yeah.
This is what he's talking about. And so, I mean, I was listening to our podcast from before, and I was like, oh yeah, pull back from everything, from life, and detach, and that was so off the mark. It was just so completely off the mark. It's about being fully involved, fully engaged, but with a sense of not being involved in the outcome, not being invested in the outcome.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, because that is not for us to say. You know, if I'm invested in the outcome, then I have an ulterior motive in my actions. I'm trying to achieve something for my own benefit,
right,
rather than for the achievement itself.
Right.
for the sake of the achievement itself.
It's kind of like identifying the problem, seeing the problem, or whatever it is that you're faced with, mm-hmm. instead of identifying with it. So identifying it mm-hmm. and making decisions based on that, but not identifying with it like as if whatever the outcome is affects you know,
right.
your
like,
worth
like
or
it
who
changes
you are,
me, right?
Or, yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Huh. Isn't that amazing? It's just so wow, it's freeing, it's liberating.
Yeah.
It's very liberating.
Yeah. If you can achieve it.
If and it's hard. It's really, really hard.
Yeah.
And that's what practice is all about, though. And our practice is whatever helps to reinforce that. It's whatever helps to bring about our coming into that place of centeredness.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be vigorous asana every morning. You know, it doesn't have to be 9 hours of meditation a day.
Right.
You know, or it's what we do every moment of every day that exercises our ability to handle life, face life on life's terms, skillfully and efficiently.
Yeah.
That's what practice is.
Yeah.
Because that's what yoga is.
Yeah.
I saw this movie the other night, Enlighten Up. You have to see it. About this filmmaker who she wants some experience of enlightenment or the aha, you know, the epiphany. But she doesn't want to do the work herself, so she decides she's going to hire a subject that she can film a documentary about their journey, and maybe in the process she'll get her own aha, right?
Uh-huh.
And so she's trying to force this poor man to have some realization, some transcendental realization, right? And so she goes through all of these styles of asana with him, you know, all these teachers and these really renowned yoga teachers, just, I mean, the big names,
yeah.
you know, in yoga. And actually some of their answers are kind of funny too. But it's just amazing how, what was my point here? How they missed the point. That's mm-hmm. what I wanted to say. They missed the entire point of yoga. I mean, they're seeing practice asana and the enlightenment comes somehow through the physical postures or, and she's like, are you getting it yet? Are you getting it yet? Are you getting it yet?
Felt it yet.
You felt it yet? And he's like, no, not really.
was he interested in enlightenment as well? Or did she just drag him into it?
Since he applied for the thing, I guess in some way he had some kind of interest. But then at the very end of the movie, it showed him rock climbing and doing his passion, you know. And this is what, and he's a journalist, and he writes rock climbing articles, right? And so he's rock climbing, and to do something like rock climbing, I mean, your entire mind, body, everything has to be, you are the mountain, I mean,
yeah.
He's like scaling a sheer cliff wall, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, there you go.
He's doing yoga. Yeah. That's his spiritual moment.
You know? And I mean, and they didn't get it the whole time. And they still didn't get it even at the very end. Mm. It was so amazing. And I'm like, but you got it, you know?
Right.
You do get it.
Yeah. So was that message in the movie?
No, it wasn't.
No. You'll need to do part two.
Yeah.
The, like, half-hour version that explains it.
or maybe that was just a real subtle kind of thing about, maybe you'll get it, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing. You know?
Right.
They didn't say anything. It's just for, yeah, see.
Yeah.
Goodness.
So detachment, it's just a natural effect of practice, right? Practice reveals the internal fullness. I like James's analogy. He says, if you have a meal, like a really nourishing, fulfilling, satisfying meal, very healthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go out with a friend afterward and he invites you to a fast food restaurant, right? He said this in our podcast.
Right.
You're much less likely
to
go in there and, you know, gobble up the, you know, the special or whatever, the 99-cent special. and do damage to yourself than if you go out hungry. It's the same thing with practice. So when we find that internal fullness, then life can hand us something that we like, and we can partake of it, you know, with discretion.
Right.
You know? And with balance. Yeah. And if life throws us something we don't quite like, then we can say, okay, you know, this is, I can handle that. It's fine too, whatever. So, 115, Drishta, Anushravika, Vishaya, Vrishnasya, Vashikara Samdhya, Varagyam. Vairagyam. Vashikara Samya Vairagyam. So, Aranya, Swami Aranya, says, when the mind loses all desire for objects seen or described in scriptures, it requires a state of utter desirelessness, which is called detachment.
Iyengar says, renunciation is the practice of detachment from desires.
Satchidananda says, the consciousness of self-mastery in one who is free from craving for objects seen or heard about is non-attachment.
So they seem to be really specific about desirelessness, cravings, those type of things. And I think that's why it kind of threw me a little bit. I don't know about you guys, but that's why it confused me just a bit.
Yeah.
As far. Vrijishnasnaya, or Vrijishnasya, that was translated directly as freedom from desire by Iyengar, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And what is he? What is
Nasya?
Vrijishnasya.
Of him who is free from craving.
Okay. So, and what James said is it actually directly translates to lack of thirst.
Huh.
Oh.
Yeah. So, a lack of thirst. And, I think it just really brought it home for me that it's... The detachment isn't cultivated on its own. It's not something that we sit down, I'm going to detach now. And I'm just going to turn everything off and make the world go away.
Right.
You know? It's not at all. It's about being fully involved. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, not allowing that involvement to push us around or to be caught up in the momentum.
Yeah.
Instead, be able to go with the flow of our inner, of what we feel is the right path for us.
Yeah. Well, also going with the flow of maybe it's, we don't think it's the right path for us, but being open to the possibility that something outside of us knows better than we do
right.
what is the best path.
Yeah, so being open to the moment.
Yeah,
being open to the maybe we don't know best. I think that's important too.
Yeah,
for being free from that craving of
which is usually a mental
awareness.
Thing.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Instead of finding just the courage to follow the heart.
Right.
Yeah.
Or letting go, even. Mm-hmm. Of letting go of. Believing that you know the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like with your the letter, so it was like there might be another, they might have another path that's waiting for you. Right.
That's right.
So there's not just the one that you can nail down. This is the only way.
That's right. Just because that's how I wanted it so bad. That's what I was all ready for and planning for and the best laid plans. Oh well. So should we move on to the next one?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to continue to say the Sanskrit. And I actually have been doing Sanskrit recitation practice, so although you couldn't tell with that last one. Tatparam purushakyate Gunavaitrisnyam. So that R with the dot under it is actually a vowel.
Really?
I found out, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the H with the dot underneath it, that behaves differently depending on where the H is in a sentence. In this particular case, Purusha Kyatehe. Purusha Kyatehe. So it echoes the sound before it.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Tatparam Purusha Kyatehe. He didn't put. Oh, okay. And then sometimes it can be replaced by an R or an S, depending on the letter that comes after it and where it is in the verse.
Wow.
Yes. So that H can behave in many different ways. Yeah. So I'm really interested in learning Sanskrit now.
Yeah. What a complicated
especially
language.
It's Sanskrit means well polished. And it actually is very scientific in the way that it's put together with its sounds, because it was spoken for so many centuries and centuries before it was ever written, that it had to be spoken in a way that was very easily understood, or sung in a way that was very easily understood. So its rules of grammar are more based on
oral.
The way it sounds,
Then
the way it's written.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and it's very complex, very complex. So that's gonna be a new fun, new fun path. All right. So, Swami Aranya says, indifference to the gunas or the constituent principles achieved through a knowledge of the nature of the purusha is called paravaraigya, or supreme detachment.
Iyengar says the ultimate renunciation is when one transcends the qualities of nature and perceives the soul.
And Satchidananda says when there is non-thirst for even the gunas due to realization of the purusha, that is supreme non-attachment.
So I know what the gunas are, right?
Constituents of nature is what
which
he says.
Are? We're talking about way, way early on.
Yeah.
So, three things that are put into motion, which are the basis of all material reality: Raja, Tamas, and Sattva. So, Raja is the active principle. Tamas is the inert principle, and Sattva is the principle which sustains all of it. Okay. So, when these three things are put into interplay, then we have everything that exists around us. And underlying all of that is the conscious principle, so which is purusha. And it underlies, permeates, it's everything. So when we are able, they say renunciation or indifference, and what do you have? There's the non-thirst. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, non-thirst. So non-thirst I like. Renunciation, indifference, not so much.
I like renunciation the least.
Yeah. Because it implies a negative, and there are no negatives in any of this.
Yeah,
there are no negatives anywhere in yoga. So non-thirst is probably the one that I would go for.
Mm-hmm.
So when we can basically not be pushed and pulled by all those forces of nature, all those circumstances of life, and be able to reveal that innermost center.
Yeah.
That's the supreme, that's what they're talking about, the supreme detachment. Yeah. And that is, I mean, we can get to that in different stages. It's not something that's like so far from being attained, you know, it's like levels of work. You know, they're way above anything.
Yeah.
We can have that in very small stages, very gradual levels. I mean, first we can begin to experience just kind of a peace and respite from maybe bodily sensations or mental disturbances, worries. You know, we can have momentary glimpses of that tranquil, peaceful state. And
like when we meditate before class sometimes.
Like when we meditate before class sometimes. Even when we're not in a space where everything is quiet around us, you know. We're not in that ideal setting for meditation or centering, you know. We might be faced with something outside.
Yeah.
A girlfriend of mine was saying the other day, some situation in her neighborhood blew up. And she all of a sudden became the person everybody went to. And normally, she said, it would have caused her to kind of go a little, you know,
haywire,
yeah. Like, it would just, one person yelling this, the other person yelling that. But instead, somehow, she just zoomed in on something and came into this absolute center of stillness and was able to see the path. You know, she saw exactly what needed to be done and exactly what needed to be said. And it just came. It's not like it was anything that she had to premeditate or think about or, you know, it just happened.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those, you know, one of those moments. Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't have to necessarily be when we're sitting, you know, cross-legged on our meditation cushion, you know.
Which is the classic
time.
Picture of vision of what that would be.
But when it really, when we know it's really working, is when it stands the test.
Yeah. Of reality. The bad world.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So, yeah. So, detachment. Yeah, that's a pretty tricky one. And mastery of desire, you know, it says here, is one of the stages. When I know when I went to Critical Massive. I feel like I'm talking a lot.
That's okay.
I know when I went to Critical Massive. I mean, it was a party.
Yeah.
It was, that's all it was a huge 1 week of costumes and camping, and it was so much fun.
Yeah.
But people were just partying like crazy. And in the past, I would have jumped right in and gone way overboard.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And instead, I maintained, you know, my sense of where I needed to be and how I and what I wanted to get out of the entire experience.
Right.
And I was able to really keep myself in just complete control.
Yeah.
And I had an amazing time. I mean, it was just, I had so much fun, and I came out of the whole situation, the whole experience, refreshed and ready to jump right into our podcast that we had with James.
Right.
You know?
Just right after.
I would have been a wreck probably 5 years ago. I would have needed another week to recover from it, you know? But instead, I really enjoyed myself. I had a great time. I danced for hours every night.
Yeah.
And I danced because I was having fun dancing, you know?
Right.
Not because I was, like, just
floating
crazy. Exactly. No, that wasn't it. And I remember the experience, and I enjoyed the experience.
Yeah.
It was really neat. It was really, really neat.
Well, because I think that we come to a place where we think that, perhaps kind of like Deborah was saying incorrectly, sometimes we think that we know what's best for ourselves, but it's not. It's sort of from 1.15, it's like, so it's desires, and they seem really tempting, and they seem like they bring happiness and joy, yet what you've discovered is now having gone and had this experience is that actually you had a much more enlightening and a much more fulfilling experience by resisting those desires. And the more you practice that, it seems like, you know, next time now when you know, somebody in your position would go again or whatever, you now know, and it becomes easier and easier to just be like, I don't want to be a part of that, yeah, because I know actually how much more fun I have, yeah, when I'm not submitting to those desires. So it starts to kind of, the more you practice it, the more it feeds on, yeah, itself, and the more you
practice
grow.
Builds on itself, absolutely.
And you start to trust, you realize, I know, mm-hmm, what's the right path, but because I've been pursuing all these desires, it's clouded the revelation of my true self to me. And as the more you have those types of experiences, your true self tells you,
that's right,
what you need.
That's right.
That's really cool that you had that experience.
It really was. It really was. It, it really brought this even more home. I mean, everything just like you said, it just, one thing builds on the other thing to really fortify and reinforce.
Right.
Reinforce the previous experience. So that eventually the practice is so strong that, again, the detachment just naturally comes as a result.
Right. Right.
And I remember on Saturday night of the last night of Critical Mass of, it was probably about maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. And everything kind of went on until 5 a.m.,
yeah,
you know. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, you know what? I'm done.
I'm tired.
Yeah, I'm tired. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to bed.
Could you, with all the noise and everything?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I was very used to it by that time. Mm-hmm. Because
I still wasn't
staying up until 5 a.m. every night anyway,
right,
you know, because, you know, when I was done, I was done.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have to stay out and experience, right, everything that was going on, you know,
right,
so, yeah.
And that feeling of that, you know, are you missing something? We were talking about that
earlier.
I mean, and that's in so many different facets of life. It's like, should I have been there? Am I missing out on something? I'm missing,
mm-hmm,
it. But if you've got all of this,
mm-hmm,
everything internally straight, you're not missing anything because,
right,
it's all here.
That's right.
Doesn't matter if you're there or in your tent. You're still having your experience,
mm-hmm,
as you define it.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so that, I think, does anybody have anything to add about detachment?
No.
No personal experiences that you can relate to it?
Hmm.
I mean, I've been...
Nothing recently.
Just so I have a chance to eat some edamame.
Yeah. I'm trying to think.
I had a recent thing that happened with the baby. So the baby's in the breech position right now, which means she's head up, and it's not optimal for vaginal birth, which is what I would like to have.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course, that brings up a lot of issues. Like, I might not have the birth experience that I want.
Oh, you might have to get the
cesarean.
Epidural or whatever?
The cesarean.
Wow,
so,
yeah.
From one extreme to the next,
yeah,
right? Wow. So, you know, I talked to my doctor about it, and she was just very much like, you know, at 30 weeks she was breech, and then at 32 she was breech, and 34 she's breech. So it's like, okay, she's kind of persistently breech, so this could be a potential problem. They don't really worry about it until 37 weeks.
Uh-huh.
But still, I mean, as the person carrying her, you know, and potentially having to deal with a situation that I don't want, I'm dealing with it immediately, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so when I went to that appointment and we were talking about having to potentially have a C-section and stuff, this was something I had not even considered an option, you know, for me.
Mm.
So since my husband and I have been going to natural childbirth classes and, you know, reading all this stuff about it, and everything is saying, like, vaginal birth is what's best for the health of the baby and the health of the mom. And so, you know, I had a breakdown that night, and then, you know, I was crying, and I'm like, you know, this isn't, I'm not going to be good for the baby. It's like, you know.
Right.
So, and then also there's this whole thing that was coming up where we also were taught, or, you know, as part of the education, is to just trust your body.
Yeah.
And your body will do what it's naturally meant to do, and trust the baby, because the baby knows.
Right.
And, you know, that made me upset. I'm like, I guess I can't trust my body. I guess I can't trust the baby because it's not, you know.
Right.
But after working through it, it probably took me about 24 hours to really
sit with it and think about it. And I talked to a friend of mine who had planned herself. She had planned a home birth, and, like, she had to have a C-section. So I talked to her about it, and it's like, you know, it really, what it really means is trust your body, trust the baby, that it they know best. Maybe this is how the baby is supposed to be delivered.
Right.
Because of, you know, because there are medical reasons why sometimes, you know, if the cord is in a bad position and the baby can't turn.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, you know, then the baby does know best and your body does know best, right?
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time, I mean, I'm doing things to help encourage her to turn.
Yeah.
But I've also done a lot of mental work to come to terms with that I may have to have an operation versus a vaginal.
Right.
And I'm okay with that right now.
Yeah.
Which is something, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
What I don't think, I know that I was not okay. I mean, it just wasn't even on the
radar.
Yeah, the radar. Like, yeah. This is not going to happen. Like, I'm not even going to worry about it. This is something that, you know, it's just not an option. But then it became an option because of the baby.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, this is what it is. And so my friend that I mentioned who had a similar experience said that it's almost the first lesson in parenting.
Yeah.
Because children are there to help us evolve as people, as humans, right?
Yeah.
And so this is the first challenge that you're met of, like, you can't control everything. Like, you have to trust the baby.
Yeah.
You have to work with what, you know, you're given in the situation and come to terms with it. So
that is so yoga.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
It was really powerful and just transforming.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been, you know, trying to help other women because I'm on, like, a baby board and I'm just, like, a listserv.
Yeah.
And just trying to help other women, too, who are, like, in the same situation where they're, like, planning natural births and have a breech baby. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, definitely do the things. Like, there are non-invasive things you can do, like acupuncture and chiropractic, and doing the chiropractic. And then there's some yoga poses that actually help the baby turn.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do all that, but it's I keep stressing to people, don't overlook the mental work to come to terms with the fact that you may not get that no matter how much work you do. I mean, you could do 24 hours, 7 days a week acupuncture, and the baby might not turn.
Right. Right.
You know, it's like, just let go.
And in letting go, perhaps one gets perspective to realize things like, you know, I know people close to me who have struggled so much to even get pregnant and even, you know, through things like IVF and years and years and years. And, you know, in some ways you're so blessed, you know, and it would be terrible if you can't do the vaginal birth. But the big picture is you have this beautiful thing growing inside of you. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to see that. I'm kind of thinking about, with your example, I'm thinking about myself and this whole wedding planning and getting so involved in that. And you get so caught up in the minutia and the details.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to say, you know, this, I need to stop. We need to back up because I was overwhelmed by everything that I was faced with, all this planning and all this life change. And it overwhelmed me. And I thought the only way I can really get my hands around that is by planning and organizing and setting dates and setting things up and getting things crossed off the to-do list. And in doing so, I've totally lost the ability to just enjoy the fact that I'm so happy to be in this place and I have this person. And that's really the big picture. And, you know, these little things that, and look, a breech baby is much different than wedding planning.
But it's similar,
in that just sense. Remembering, you know, when we're able to detach is, I think, when we're able to kind of see the bigger picture and say, kind of calm ourselves down and say, you know what, this is what's really going on. And I'm, like, we almost are, when we're so caught up in the minutia, it's like we are getting tricked by these things that we think are so important.
Yeah.
But really, when you stop letting those have such a hold over you, you realize that it's all okay. That, you know, it sort of allows one to take things with perspective.
Great analogy to this one, that is.
Yeah.
So the gunas being the details, being all of the natural, everything that's going on around us, or unnatural, whatever it may be.
Right.
Yeah. And the overall, the larger picture being,
Yeah.
That and underlying consciousness, that underlying thread.
Well,
because the
good
thing
is
that really is important.
Right.
Yeah.
The goodness trick us because you're starting to think then that, oh my gosh, maybe this is, you know, has a bearing on my parenting,
right,
and things like this that, mm-hmm, you know, and we start to, it's like that identification with this, mm-hmm, problem, like, oh, I have,
right,
this problem, and so now I identify, mm-hmm, with it, and I got this letter, and it's not what I wanted, and I identify with that, and just, what does that mean about me?
Right.
And actually, it doesn't mean anything about you.
Right.
You know, and that's, I think, where
the wedding plans
are
driving me crazy. What does,
yeah,
that mean?
And it has nothing to do, you know, it's when we identify with these things, we internalize them, and we associate them as having some sort of measure of,
mm-hmm,
our worth,
mm-hmm,
our self-worth, and the measure of my relationship, you know, my,
right,
relationship,
right,
this wedding has to be perfect because my relationship is perfect, and that this wedding, you know, and it's like,
yeah,
actually, no, I could marry him,
yeah,
by a dumpster, and,
right,
you know, it'd be fine, and realizing that it's not that that defines us.
That's right.
Totally.
How we deal with it.
It's interesting because I had that too with the wedding planning. I had to keep reminding myself, like, I have the man I want to marry. That's all I need.
Right.
If there are no favors,
yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah.
If it rains,
yeah,
I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Right. It's hard though.
Yeah.
It is hard to keep your, you know,
yeah,
your center on the actual reason that you're doing this. Like, I'm having a baby.
Hard. Right.
You know, like, she's the number one. Like, having a healthy baby however she needs to come out, you,
right,
know?
Right.
Whatever. It's like she's,
you know,
the important part. You joining your life with someone.
Yeah.
That's the important part.
Right.
Like,
mm-hmm,
I mean, the other stuff is just
peripheral.
Yeah.
And it's there.
It's there.
But
and
it doesn't need
gorgeous
to control, but it, the hope is that we cannot let it control us,
yeah,
and how we see ourselves.
And taint our,
right,
vision of it. Like, to be,
right,
like, oh, it sucks now.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Suck
and
all
it
the
is
joy
a shock
out of it
when you find these things out that,
mm-hmm,
she's breached and it's been continuing for weeks. I mean, I think it would be a mistake to think that we're not allowed to feel that.
Oh,
and
no, it's very important
to feel it.
Yeah, it's very important that,
yeah,
we do allow ourselves to,
yeah,
feel the disappointment, that we do allow ourselves,
right,
to feel the shock or the,
yeah,
you know, that not the moment of non-acceptance, of,
yeah,
not wanting to accept it, so that we can face it.
Right.
We can identify that, and then we can actually separate from it,
right,
and say, okay, this is what this is,
mm-hmm,
and this is not me.
Right.
Exactly.
Kind of put it on the shelf.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Put it away.
Exactly, because it is in that moment of really experiencing it.
Yeah.
And then being able to take it and just put it in its box, you know.
Yeah.
And say, okay, this is the experience.
Yeah.
But I am not the experience.
Yeah.
I am still going to go on even,
mm-hmm,
after this experience.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It does take processing.
And
it
this
does
experience,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. And this experience is part of this greater overall grand thing,
mm-hmm,
you,
right,
know,
yeah,
which is, that's what the important thing is. This,
right,
little experience is only,
right,
yeah,
it's a minor detail.
It's a minor detail.
Yeah.
It's like,
right,
these little reminders that help us get the big picture. This processing,
yeah,
you know, these things that upset us. It's like we have to feel them in order to get the perspective.
Exactly.
It's like a
we
necessary step. Yeah, and
we
it's
have to embrace
of,
it in,
yeah,
order to overcome it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm,
it's like my mom always said, stress. You know, she said stress is us telling ourselves that we need to do something or do something differently.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
she's like, you know, I try to look at it as I embrace it because the stress is what's going to help me get past whatever,
mm-hmm,
it is that's, you know.
It's like a warning sign, or is it more of a tool to work through?
Kind of,
a little bit of both, maybe.
A little bit of both,
yeah,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Just, it's like, a warning sign that you need to do something, and B, sort of a physical manifestation of knowing, you know, just knowing that you need to do something differently,
okay,
or,
mm-hmm,
you know, if you're, I don't know, stressed about your job or your career, I mean, maybe that's telling you something, and,
mm-hmm,
you need to kind of stare that down in order to figure out, you know, is it that I'm overextenuating myself, or,
yeah,
is it that I'm actually not
in the wrong,
in the
right,
right place,
right,
or,
right, yeah, definitely.
I love that story.
Yeah.
That
was kind of amazing how it worked out, you,
yeah,
know, to a couple days, but to really come to terms with it.
So I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
It was really
That's
it was
practice.
Tough.
That's practice.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, having my husband who, as a guy, he just sort of wants to fix it. And he's just like, everything's going to be fine. And I'm like, it's not going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it really
yeah.
is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Totally. Totally. At this point now, I can say that.
Yeah. But it's hard.
Yeah.
I guess that's why it's practice.
That's right.
Right? Because it's not like you do it once and
if
now
it were
you're
easy,
done.
Why would we want to even do it? You know, I'd be like, ah, oh, that's okay, we're done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're looking for something else to do that's more challenging.
Yeah.
Because
right.
we need our challenge.
Right.
All right.
But this is a good one.
I like this one a lot. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go ahead and just conclude this half of our discussion today. Namaste, and thank you all for your wonderful and inspiring contributions.
Please check our website at www.wayoftheyogi.com for the link to this podcast.
And we're going to pause for a break now, and when we return, we'll pick up with the next four sutras of the Samadhi Pada.